Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. That's where you find us in Wave weekdays from 1 to 3. We'll be here till then. And Ro and Anna will continue to inform you today. It's usually some hijinks on this show and plenty on theirs. Maybe less so today, huh? Well, here we are on a Monday afternoon. Hope you had a nice weekend. By and large, I did, although it was kind of a strange weekend, too. I have a little bit of whiplash after watching the president's speech today. He read well, a well-written speech. But all weekend long, we were perplexed at his sort of Twitter fight, right, with the mayor of Puerto Rico and the media. Another weekend for the president. Saturday Night Live was brutal on the president. But now that all seems like distant history, doesn't it, because of what happened in Las Vegas. You know, Arsen Panayotovic, if you've been listening to WGN Radio today, you know that he was out there, not for the concert, but he was watching the stream of people pouring out of the concert, I believe from his car. He's going to catch up with us again in a little bit. And I mentioned that there's this young man I just spoke to off the air in the office a little while ago named Kyle Harris. He's an Oak Brook kid, about 25 years old. Oak Park. Yeah, he's from Oak Park. And he manages a restaurant out there now. And he was at the concert. I just posted a picture of him standing there as the carnage is sort of unfolding around him. He didn't take the picture. Somebody else did. And lo and behold, it's appeared in social media. We took that picture, posted it, and just reminded you that he'll tell us his first-person experience in about a half an hour. And we'll sort of keep you posted on the numbers and the story as it unfolds. You just heard that the number is at 58 and what was it, 515? Is that what we're saying now, Steve? 515 people injured.
With one injury or another, right? Treated for some sort of injury.
Yeah, we don't know how many of those were bullet wounds and how many of those were trampling or falling injuries or something like that, right?
Correct.
I mean, it's, in fact, as I was talking to this young man off the air, Kyle, who will join us in about half an hour, he was saying that from his vantage point, he was just watching the people rushing out and piling up. In fact, in some of the video that you'll see, if you choose to, you'll hear a lot of people, even as the bullets are cracking overhead, say, should we go or not go? And actually discussing this, you know, everybody's recording the concert on their phones. And so you've got the video and audio, and there's this real-time discussion with people on the ground about should we get up and make a run for it. You're afraid that the machine gun fire is going to start going off again and you'll get hit. And some of them were saying, no, we'll get trampled if we go now or if we don't go now. It's sort of like this life and death decision. What do we do next? What do we do next? Do we stay on the ground? Do we stand up and run? If we run, we might get hit by a bullet and we may be part of the stampede, and that can be deadly too. What do you do? Sam Panayotovic is on line 7. Hi, Sam. It's John. Thanks for joining us here. How are you, man?
Well, John, it's been an exhausting 12 hours, pretty emotionally draining. I go back 12 hours, 11 o'clock p.m. local time. I was in a car. My brother was driving. A bunch of friends were heading back from dinner to go back to our hotel. Didn't know what we were going to embark on. Thought maybe some blackjack, maybe some roulette, and everything changed. We were barricaded off the strip at Flamingo Road about 11:30 or so, and we were wondering why. What's going on? Why can't we get to our hotel, which we had to turn right and get back onto the strip? They had barricaded everything off, and we had lowered the windows to try and get a sense of what was going on. All we heard were sirens, sirens upon sirens upon sirens. And then moments later, as we're gridlocked at this intersection, just trying to get back to our room, you start seeing droves of people booking it, just running away from what we learned was the shooting at Mandalay Bay. They were just taking off and trying to get as far away as possible from the scene. People weaving through cars, running, crying, screaming, shouting, some of them with blood on their clothes. And, you know, people getting out of Ubers and cabs and party buses in our vicinity just to join the crowd in fleeing because nobody knew what was going on. The uncertainty was very eerie.
Right. So while you knew they were the victims coming at you or the people fleeing the scene, you didn't know, or the people around you didn't know if the carnage wasn't going to be visited on you too, huh? Who knows what's around the corner?
We had no idea. And the radio, the local radio, and of course social media, if you were to follow social media, which some people in the car were, there were reports of shootings at five or six hotels. There
right.
was a bomb threat at the Luxor. So we didn't know where to go. And the conversation in the car was, well, do we drive to Reno? Do we drive around the city limits? Do we try and go back to the hotel? Because we had heard multiple shooters at multiple places. They were playing checkers. We were playing chess. We didn't know what to do, and that's the scariest part about it because you try and stay calm and collected and cool, but you just don't know. And, of course, at the time, we have no idea that we're a part of or near the biggest shooting in American history, you know, casualty-wise. You don't know that at the time. You don't know the facts. So we're trying to find the facts while at the same time trying to navigate throughout Vegas without having any idea what's going on.
It's interesting because right after Boston or during the Boston Marathon bombing, the social media was quick and it was helpful and it was also quick and it was a disservice. Much was incorrectly reported then. And my understanding is that social media got a lot wrong right away in this case. And sometimes it's people using the situation for who knows what reason. Sometimes it's people that are trying to help, you know, relaying, here's what I'm hearing, here's what I'm hearing. But relaying information that's just not accurate. President Obama's speech after Sandy Hook, he had to compose himself. I watched it again today, and it was 15 seconds. He just stood there and then wiped his eye and then went on and then paused and did it again. The president's speech was really good today. He was not as emotional. And the speeches both, I think, sort of fit the circumstances in the time. We'll talk more about that down the road. Back to you, Sam Panionovich. Were you in a vehicle then with some friends? How many, were you in a car, a cab? Were you renting a vehicle? What was that situation?
We rented a van. My brother was in shotgun. No, my brother was driving. We had six people in total, including myself, and just trying to get back to the hotel. Just like I said, though, the inability to
realize what was going on,
have any idea.
Sam, you know, so let's just go back to that point. Some of the video I saw today showed vehicles that were much closer to the scene, and those people were actually triaging, like opening up the doors of their vans and saying, quick, get in, we'll get you to a hospital, even as there were scores of ambulances there. You're talking about, you know, maybe the need for 600 people to get in emergency vehicles and get out of there. So some citizens were just grabbing other citizens, putting them in their cars and ferrying them off. Did you see anything like that take place?
No, not where we were. We were a little bit further down the strip, I'd say about five or six blocks. And, you know, as the reports were filing through, I imagine a lot of people in the car radios were, you know, listening to the information because all you could hear were sirens. All you could see were flashing lights, red, white, and blue, red and white, you know, for the cop cars, for the fire trucks, for the ambulances. So people just decided that they were not going to be trapped at this intersection and they wanted to get out. That's what I saw from there. Let me take it to when I finally got back to the hotel. This is about 30 minutes later. We're walking through the lobby. People are frantically pacing all over the place, running around. John, nobody's gambling. Nobody's eating. Nobody's drinking. Nobody's doing anything that everybody does in Vegas.
Yeah, no kidding. Boy, that must be a first, yeah.
Vegas is a place where you come to escape. It's a place that you can have all the fun in the world at. You can win money. You can lose money. You can do this. You can do that. And when I finally got up to my room, I overlooked the strip. The hotel overlooks the strip. Not a car on the strip. The only people near the strip are the ones running away from the strip. It was very eerie.
Yeah. So you're going to be out there a couple more days because I understand that flights have been canceled. They're opening the airport back up or flights are getting out. But what's your travel plan then?
I'm not going to change much. I've got dinner tonight. I've got plans tomorrow. Coming back on Wednesday, that won't change. I'm not going to let one wacko alter my life. But I did just want to say one more thing real quick. The first responders and the police and the firemen, I already shook a couple firemen and policemen's hands early this morning. When I finally left the hotel about, 8 o'clock local time after all the hits I've been doing all morning, just thanking them for what they did. I mean, if you really think about it, John, and I think the reason that the multiple shooters angle came out was because this guy, Stephen Paddock, had over 10 rifles in his room, and he was shooting out of multiple windows that he had broken open. He was just reloading magazines in the clips, and all the bullets, it was unfathomable that it was from one person. And I think you have to give so much credit to those policemen that were brave enough to go down that hallway and make this guy end it, because if they don't go down there, he's up there just picking people off for hours. He had that much ammo. He had that many weapons.
If I may, Sam, I just – so all weekend long, I was watching Ken Burns' Vietnam. And, they got machine guns in Vietnam. It's amazing to me how much this sounded like a firefight in Vietnam. You know, both sides – and literally both sides firing in those battle scenes. But this sounded like a battle scene. There was so much – there were so many bullets coming out of that window or that room that he was in. You can't believe that it was just one guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I followed up on a lot of these reports. I mean, this was psychotically planned out. He checked into his room on Thursday. He planned out every single detail. His room overlooked the exit of the concert. There was only one exit. Everybody had to leave through one path, and the path they were leaving just so happened to be right in the vicinity of his launch angle where he was firing bullets. He built platforms in his room so he could aim better. He knocked out two windows so he could shoot at different angles, and he unleashed on a country music crowd on the biggest, most popular headline event on the biggest day on a Sunday night. This was calculated. This was vicious, man.
Okay, buddy. Well, I'm sorry for everybody. You and I are lucky to not have to feel it maybe as closely as those other people do. It's just insane. And, you always talk to me on Monday about our football picks. You always do five games. What are we, 2-2 here, Sam?
Yeah, football seems like such a footnote today, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In the Super Contest, it was a rough, weird weekend in the NFL. We won two, we lost two. We've got the Monday night game tonight, Redskins +6.5. If we win that, we'll be in the top 80, which is back in the top, 7%. We're 212th right now, but we're still picking 67%. We're 12-6-1. If we win tonight, we'll have 13.5 points, and we're on our way.
I'll talk to you later. Safe travels.
You got it.
Sam Panionovich, I think he's going to be on with Roe later on if more information becomes available. He's obviously closer to the scene than we are. But here's just the sound. I don't know how much of it you've heard. I watched a lot of TV today. I listened to the radio as well. But there's plenty of videos that are being posted. And to the point that you can understand why they thought it was multiple shooters, the sound from the ground was like this. It's, I think in the instances where we've seen or heard shooting, it's bam, 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 even if it's fast. That's a machine gun. We're just not used to that kind of firepower. Terrible day. It's 121. This is WGN. I mean, the market correction is 10%. And you'd say, if it came down 22,000, if it came down 2,200 points, you go, oh, no. Are you kidding me? If at the beginning of this year you said, take where we are now, subtract 2,200, would you be happy with 20,000? Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would. Hey, Steve, ask me if I'd be happy with that.
Would you be happy with 20,000? Yeah, I would. I hope you don't have to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not inviting that on us, but I'm just saying keep some perspective here that we've just had a nice run. And so then I think, oh, God, it was a terrible day. Everybody's depressed. Maybe people will react that way. Maybe North Korea's got people scared. The president this weekend said, I'm done talking to North Korea. We know what to do. We're going to, it was shockingly aggressive and abrasive and dismissive and callous what the president said over the weekend. He said, I told Rex Tillerson, don't even bother talking anymore. We know what to do. All right, what does that mean? Today, the market's up 100 points.
130 points.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Just
well,
amazing.
I mean, John, or it follows a mass shooting, the worst mass shooting in U.S. history.
Right. You would think that maybe this, I don't see how that relates to markets, except that markets are the function of people, and maybe people, you know, are not in a good mood. I mean, you know, maybe it just works like that, but it doesn't. It seems positively impervious to the news. And if people are saying, yeah, but the reason it is because the new tax plan and health care, and we've got Republicans
right.
who are conservative.
And that's what they say, but it's like, well, come on.
You would think that at some point after one of these, you know, health care didn't happen, the tax plan's got problems, so you'd think maybe the market would pull back a little bit then. In fact, if we do get a health care bill through that's better, or a tax plan that lowers taxes, is it going to go up another 5,000? I mean, it's just crazy. It's crazy. It's 142. This is WGN. John Williams here. Of course, saying all of these things against the backdrop of what happened in Las Vegas. There's a young man from Oak Park named Kyle Harris who manages a restaurant out there. Kyle is the restaurant manager in Las Vegas for Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab in Caesar's Palace. I posted a picture of the carnage and the people running in all directions. You can imagine the scene. And there, standing almost casually to the side, is a young man with his back to us. And that is Kyle. He was at the concert last night. And he joins us now on WGN Radio. Kyle, it's John. You're on the air. How are you today?
John, thanks for having me. I'm doing okay. How are you today?
Did you sleep last night?
Somehow. I managed to get home, be safe, and the adrenaline wore off, and I knocked out.
You were working last night and then went to the concert afterwards?
Yeah, I worked and I was able to catch, I got a ticket from somebody. I went in and I caught the last few songs from the guy that was on before Jason Aldean, and then stuck around to hear him.
How long into Aldean's performance was it before the shooting started?
Just three or four songs.
And where were you when the shooting started?
I was toward the left side of the stage, right in front of one of the video boards, and maybe 15 people off the stage.
You were flush with the stage, but a little to the side.
Correct, yeah. I was. He came and was singing in front of us at one point.
Hmm. Now, you're from Oak Park. You went to Oak Park High School, et cetera?
I went to Oak Park River Forest High School, left there, and graduated from DePaul University School of Hospitality Leadership.
You're in the hospitality business in Vegas. Your parents must have been beside themselves before they heard you, or did you reach out to them first?
I reached out to them first. I woke them up last night, and I told them what was going on.
What was going on? So you're standing there, flush with the stage, a little to the side. Walk me through what happened.
So toward the end of his song, we start hearing what sounds like firecrackers, and people don't know what's going on. The song ends, and he starts his next song, and then that's when everything really started happening. And as you saw from some of the videos, he stopped and looked and didn't know what was going on. When those first few shots were fired, again, we didn't know that they were shots at the time, and people just sort of stood there shocked like someone's in the back. They're being crazy and stupid and doing something they shouldn't be doing. But I immediately went into the thought of something's going to happen and something isn't right and people are going to start running and being scared and fleeing. So I made my way out of the crowd and hunkered up against, there was a food truck to the left of the stage, kind of put myself up against that. And less than 5 seconds later, that's when all the shots started and people just start running. And I see people getting knocked over and stepped on, and nothing you should see in your life.
You okay to talk about this, buddy? We don't have to do this.
No, I'm good.
So weirdly, where you were positioned at the front of the stage, one might think, oh God, that's the last place you want to be, but that might have turned out to be a very safe place to be.
It turned out to be my saving grace. I mean, I saw people in front of me trying to, they were going over the barrier in front of the stage. There's always that metal stanchion that's there to keep people from the stage.
Yeah.
They were going that way, trying to get around the stage. Others were going backwards, and I just went to the side and I said, you know, there's no shots coming down near me. Or again, at the time we didn't know they were shots. And I was like, I need to get out of the way because people are going to run, and I do not want to get pushed and stepped on and trampled.
You told me that you weren't in the position where the bullets were coming, but you were, because of the position of the stage, the hotel from which he was firing, and this truck you were by. So you felt relatively safe from the gunfire there, but you also
There were still people hunkered down around me. I mean, I was just talking with one of my friends who was there. They were on the same side as me, but up against the stage, and they said that even though they were closer to the middle of the crowd, and they said people were getting shot next to them, and they kept ducking and running and ducking and running. And because of how far away from the hotel I was in relation to everything, I had structures between me and the shooter.
Yeah, yeah. You and I have talked off the air today. Have a glass of water. Let's just you and I finish this conversation in a second. I'm going to take a break, Kyle. I'm going to come back to you, okay?
Okay.
Kyle Harris is from Oak Park. He's a restaurant manager in Las Vegas. He was at the show last night. This is WGN. The music and the shooting stopped at about the same time, and there was this eerie pause. Everybody thought, okay, what just happened? They didn't know what to do, and then the shooting at that pace continued anew. It's 1:51. This is WGN Radio. Kyle Harris from Oak Park, Illinois, recently moved to Las Vegas. He is a restaurant manager out there. He manages Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab in Caesar's Palace, and had gotten to the concert and was there for the first few songs that Aldean sang when the shots rang out. He's been telling us his story about what it was like to be there in a relatively, I shouldn't even say this, safe position. But he felt like he wasn't within the direct line of sight, within the gunfire. And yet before him, he saw people trampling each other, and he heard and saw what was going on. So we pick it up from there, Kyle. So you're kind of hunkered down. The picture I actually posted of you was you standing almost casually looking out at the crowd. Can you tell me what was happening just then and why you were posed that way?
At that point was another when the shots had stopped again. And then they started while I was standing out there. And I wanted to hear what was going on because the people I was standing with, none of us believed it would to be gunshots. It didn't sound like the gunshots we know from media, from being in gun ranges, wherever it is. We were actually convinced it was the stereo system.
You're telling me that at that point you still couldn't believe, you still didn't think that was gunfire, that was something else, huh?
Right. And then I got a text message from someone I was there who said, someone next to me just got shot. We need to get out of here. And at that point I said, okay. And I turned around, I started going. I knew that I needed to be careful because there were still people leaving, and the obvious way to go was back out into sight. So I stayed next to the vehicles that I was by, and walked through fences that had been run over, and there was trash everywhere and shoes and purses and whatever people had left behind, and made my way behind the VIP section next to the stage and then out the emergency exit. And once I got out, that's when I really knew stuff was happening. I mean, at that point, I'm walking past police officers running back saying, get down, there's a shooter, get down, there's a shooter. And people are on the ground bleeding from being injured, whether it was gunshots or being trampled or what it might have been.
Do you have any sense, Kyle? And, was it the bullets or the stampede that was injuring people? Do you have any sense of that?
From my standpoint, I don't. I'm sure it was a mixture. I witnessed people getting run over, so I can't imagine what kind of injuries they sustained from that. I mean, it's a country show. People are out there in their cowboy boots, and those things are nasty. But there were also people, I saw them running in bare feet and walking over trash and broken aluminum cans and everything that couldn't have been comfortable either.
Kyle, I have just a couple minutes left here, and I just want to afford you the opportunity to share any other observations you have. What else is foremost in your mind this afternoon?
it still hasn't sunk in, I don't think, what happened. I'm sure as the days go on and people ask more questions and we try to get back to regular life here in town, it's going to be difficult. I don't know what this event is going to mean for work. I don't know what this event's going to mean for other people in town. And all I ask is that people come together and they realize that there are people out there who are sick and this isn't who we are overall, and that people still come out and they keep having fun. I mean, that was the biggest thing, is we were there last night to have fun and no one even thought about what if. There was no what if. And things like this happen all over the world, and unfortunately it's going to continue happening, but keep having fun. Don't go into a what if scenario. I mean, there's no controlling what's going to happen.
Yeah. It'll be a strange day of work for you, huh? I mean, the restaurant will be open later on?
Restaurant's open now. I'm heading in about an hour, and I'm definitely looking forward to the distraction, but to seeing people who care about each other and helping people get through it, whether they're our employees or our guests or whoever it might be. That's why I do what I do. I love being there with people and being there for people. And, yeah, I was at the event, but other people are feeling this in different ways. So whatever I can do to move forward, to get myself out of this state of mind, but also help others to just get back to the new normal.
Oh boy, Kyle. Well, you hang in there. My best to you and your family. I know you got folks and family and friends in the Chicago area and Oak Park. Stay well, and thanks for sharing some of your story with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time.
Kyle Harris from Oak Park, restaurant manager in Las Vegas at Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab in Caesar's Palace.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well, I try.
Here's John Williams.
I'm trying. I've been told it's 208. This is John in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Hey, have you made plans to come to Podcast Fest? Podcast Fest will be this Saturday night at the Old Town School of Folk Music. On stage, Kristen McQuarrie, the delightful, talented, and somewhat conservative editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune. Eric Zorn, quite the opposite of all of that. Talented, mind you, but sure not conservative. Steve Bertrand and I will be on stage doing our roundtable of current events. So literally, were we on stage today, we would be talking about this, but then other things as well. We kind of sprint through a bunch of topics. I think it's very entertaining because these people are just so dang smart and interesting to listen to, and I get to moderate. And we're going to do that on stage Saturday night. I sure hope you come. You know, maybe have a pizza or a soda pop before or afterwards. We'll be on the stage from 7 to 8:30 at the Old Town School. Tickets are at WGNradio.com/events. And it'll be another good show. I really think so. It was interesting when you watched the video, because some of the people who were at the Aldean concert in Las Vegas last night were hunkered down, and then some people, one guy stood up in his defiantly giving the hotel from where the shots are ringing out the finger. Figuring, you know what, there's 20,000 of us here, 30,000 of us here, I'll bet you won't hit me. He was the exception. But every now and then, men and women, you know, it was just everybody was reacting differently. Some people were hunkered down. Some people were shielding other people with their bodies. Some people were running, thinking that was the smartest effort. But then other people say, no, don't run. You'll get trampled or you'll get shot. But then you felt like a sitting duck if you just stayed there. Everybody had these sort of different reactions. And some, I just have in mind this image of one woman who just kind of got up in sort of like a athletic crouch, but was just looking up at the hotel, watching, and then pointing. There's where the gunfire is coming from. The fact that they were able to ascertain where the gunfire was coming from. Think about that. A whole hotel. Is it the 32nd floor or the 31st floor? I don't know. You go down the 28th floor and you run down the hall. Which of these has it? I don't know. How do you know? Now, they say that maybe the smoke alarms went off from all of the munitions he was firing. Or, Lordy, you could hear it. But if you're just getting in an elevator on the first floor and you got to find the window, how do you do that? They did it miraculously quickly. I mean, the shooting went on, of course, way too long, but I'm shocked that they found the room as quickly as they did. Steve, just to be clear on this, though, and Ryan Burrow joins us now from WGN Radio and ABC. Ryan has been whisked out to Las Vegas. You're out there right now. Is that right, Ryan?
I am, yeah. Just kind of hanging out outside of the hospital where many people are kind of learning, you know, the situations, the various family members and friends. I actually, when I arrived this morning, was riding down an escalator with a woman who was being escorted by Southwest Airlines officials to ground transportation. Her daughter, she told me, had been shot, was at the concert celebrating what will be her 24th birthday. She was hit. She said in the stomach and the groin area. Don't know if that was from the same shot or from separate shots, but she had to have surgery, had some intestines removed. That's all she knew at this point, and was said to be stable. But as she told the Southwest Airlines employee, at least we know she's alive. So she had obviously a lot of confusion, had just flown in from Austin, Texas, and was about to be reunited with her daughter, who's now recovering from gunshot wounds.
Can you imagine getting that call? I mean, you could not believe what's on the other end of the line. How yeah. Awful. Huh.
Yeah, and it happened with hundreds of people, unfortunately. You know, 58 did not get good calls, at least as of now. We've got 58. That number could rise. 515 people confirmed hurt. That doesn't necessarily mean all gunshot victims. I talked to some women who were kind of trampled in the stampede that happened afterwards, and probably some of them are twisted ankles and bumps and bruises. They also suffered a little bit of you know, busted up elbows and knees, but for the most part seemed to be okay. And that may be the condition of some of the people who were injured, but clearly probably hundreds shot in this situation.
You're outside one of the hospitals there. Do you get the sense they're able to handle this sudden influx of patients?
Well, I can tell you that we'll probably start seeing in the next few hours, maybe in the coming days, more doctors from various other locations being brought in to kind of help out with the staffing. I mean, it's very rarely that you get 500 people coming to hospitals all at one time. So they're going to try to figure that all out. In the meantime, people are trying to obviously reconnect. It's kind of a circus atmosphere right now. A lot of media tents, obviously, just trying to figure out what's going on and who belongs where and what hospital for each person. Many of these people aren't from here. They were here, you know, traveling or on vacation, or, you know, even some people on business who just wanted to go see a show. So it's not necessarily that, you know, all of these people are from Las Vegas and are familiar with the hospital.
Yeah.
So that's created some stress and some tension as well.
Well, I noticed on CNN, Ryan, that they have a 1-800 number, some sort of toll-free number to call to get a list of, you know, the dead and the fallen, the victims, because as it was described on TV this morning, you know, in the chaos, people are dropping everything, running, leaving. Maybe they got hit by gunfire. You don't know who that person is, and maybe they're not even in a position to say when they're wheeled into a hospital. So some of the people who have been shot may not have yet actually had a chance to relay who they are to their families or to the medical responders.
Exactly. And the concern is, too, okay, maybe you've got someone shot and you inform the relatives or the friends, but what are the extents of these injuries at this point? I mean, obviously, everyone who's been shot is not going to be in good shape, but you know, I mean, until these people can get in and get surgeries and get doctors in front of them, you know, there's not a lot of information other than, you know, person X has been shot and they will be at this location.
So is that your angle for the day or so then, Ryan, that you're going to be out there, is just following these victims now?
Yeah, it seems like it. Alex Stone is out here as well, and he's kind of covering the investigation. We'll hopefully learn a little bit more about this shooter who... we don't have a ton of information about at this point. Stephen Craig Padlock, you know, 64 years old. Really, everyone who he seems to have been around, whether it be family or friends, seems pretty shocked and stunned by this news. It doesn't seem like anyone's like, well, yeah, that's something he had been plotting to do. This seems like a surprise. The motive, obviously, is still a top priority for police and trying to figure out, you know, what would cause this to happen.
Did you all see his brother get interviewed? Steve, did you see his brother interviewed?
They saw the video, John. I didn't hear the audio.
Yeah, I did both. And he just could not express his shock. He was so stunned that he was standing there in front of his house with reporters in front of him that he couldn't even say, I feel terrible for the victims, because he couldn't process the fact that this was happening to him. You know, that was my read on it. I mean, he wasn't being insensitive.
You're referring to Eric. yeah, Eric was the brother. He one of the quotes, and it was kind of an interesting quote, but I think if you read into it, it makes a little bit of sense. He said an asteroid just fell on us.
Yeah.
No idea how or why this happened. Crushed by an asteroid. Exactly. No reason for this. So, you know, it, obviously his world has just changed considerably. It was kind of a weird and unique quote, but on the other hand, I think if you really kind of read between the lines, it shows you the magnitude of this news on him and his family.
Ryan, I remember right after the September 11th attacks, people, you know, everyone wanted to do something, and they would line up to give blood, and sadly, there was no one to give blood for.
Two, yeah.
But I know in Las Vegas today, they need that, right? They're asking people to line up and donate blood to help with these victims.
Yeah, there's a local union that set up a blood drive. Some of the hospitals are also accepting blood drives and blood donations right now. I don't have exactly the facts and figures on, you know, kind of a threshold they're seeking to receive. I think that the fear is if they give that, then people will start coming when they hit it, because mm-hmm. obviously there are more people who need blood, not just the victims here. But, yeah, that, there's been an outcry for more blood supplies as well.
The picture I saw went for blocks, at least at one hospital or a Red Cross station. It was down the street and then down the next street. People who weren't from Las Vegas necessarily, but there they were. Just okay, that's all you can do is literally give your blood for these people that have lost theirs. All right, Ryan, continue to report. We'll listen for your thoughts and observations throughout the next couple of days. Thanks for giving us some of your time today. John, I was at a shooting range this weekend with two neighbors and one of their high school-age sons. A great time was had by all, shooting 15 different guns. Shooting is fun. Crazy people are crazy. Thanks. Hey, John, just want to say that no matter how much security there is or how vigilant we are, the bottom line is we all have become targets. Soon none of us will feel safe or secure going anywhere. John, will we ever know how many people died because of gunshots and how many were trampled to death? I suppose we will. I'm sure they'll be able to know the difference in the injuries, but we don't have any sort of reporting on that so far. I have often thought when I am at Wrigley Field or on the L or in sometimes compact spaces that we have not thought through well enough emergency egress for people. When you get out of Wrigley Field and you make that left-hand turn and you are going down Addison, you're heading towards the L tracks or whatever, and the buses are all lined up there and they have those concrete stanchions. So it's kind of hard to, you know, do anything but get in the line if you're making the left turn and just wait through with all of these people. It's really frustrating. It's really slow. And I've often thought, I'm not sure this is really safe. When you go to the Chicago Marathon next weekend, you know, they'll have lots of areas that'll be cordoned off with those interlocking metal fences. And I know why they do that. But sometimes I think those things can be as much a problem as they can be in a help, you know.
We could either prepare for everything or we can operate under the assumption that some things that we're just going to be safe. You know, I mean, if we look at every possibility, we'll be paralyzed. And here's mine, at the train stations.
Yeah.
You know, you used to take the Metro train. When you get off the train, sometimes if there are two trains on parallel tracks,
yep,
emptying at the same time,
yep,
it is gridlock with hundreds and hundreds of people standing there
and
totally nowhere
is.
To go.
I know, and people get really frustrated. Well, what if a pop went off or something like that? I know the exact scene you're talking about, Steve. Frankly, the last time, so Friday, I leave this radio station. I get on the L to go north to go home. The first two trains that come to get me are so full that when the doors open up, it's like China. You can't get on. The doors open and a couple people squeeze in, but most of us just waited for the next train. Same thing happened. Third train comes and I'm like, all right, we all just squeeze in there. Every seat taken and every handrail is occupied. There is not square foot for another person in that train. And I thought, okay, what if something happened on this train, right? What if I just got sick and I needed some space or needed to get off, you know, whatever. It's almost like they let too many people on the trains. I don't know why they don't have either more train cars or run more trains. I don't know what the solution is, but just cramming that many people into that tight of space does not seem like a good idea. On the best of days, if somebody had to burp, the whole train would have to deal with it, to say nothing of the terrible things that could happen. The reason you have fencing at Chicago Lollapalooza or something like that, of course, is to keep the people that pay for tickets on one side and the people that don't on the other. That's why you do it. Sometimes it's crowd flow. Like if there's a parade going down Michigan Avenue, they'll put that up so people don't get in the way of traffic in the parade. But I think a lot of times it's just to, you know, control the ticket purchases. But sometimes you think, wait a minute, people maybe need a little more opportunity to move about. The guy we had on a little while ago, Kyle Harris from Oak Park, who manages a restaurant in Las Vegas, said that he said all of, but let's say much of the exit was through a particular area there at that concert venue. I'm thinking you should allow more. There should be 10 exits when you're trying to get out of a concert venue. I'm trying to think of the venues, you know, United Center, Wrigley, Sox Park. I'm not exactly sure how comfortable we all are with getting in and out of those places. But when there are that many people standing in that close of proximity, maybe we should start to rethink that too. I know your point, Steve.
Then we change everything we do and for the possibility that the nearly impossible will happen.
Well, I mean, still take off my shoes at airports, and I haven't complained about that yet.
Would you, though, would you wait an extra 15 minutes for an L car if there was a limit of only room for people to sit?
Well, I don't like that as my only option. I want more L cars. I think that's fixable. I mean, that's the thing. So aren't maybe some of these, I'm pointing out the problems, and now I need somebody else to figure out what the solution is. John, will we ever know how many people died because of the shots and trampled to death? Yeah, I don't know. John, I'm a gun owner. And I'm in favor of sensible gun laws. Nevada does not have sensible gun laws. In fact, their laws made this senseless act much more possible. Crazy is crazy, but that doesn't mean we should not do everything in our power to make these senseless acts committed by people less likely. Amen to that. Newsweek magazines were reporting of the gun laws in Nevada are amazing. Nevada law does not require firearms owners to have licenses, register their weapons, or limit the number of firearms they can possess. Automatic assault weapons and machine guns are also legal in the state as long as they are registered and are possessed in adherence to federal law. They do not prohibit the transfer or possession of assault weapons, 50 caliber rifles, or large capacity ammunition magazines. Local law enforcement issues concealed handgun licenses. Open carry is legal without a permit in Nevada. So just to be clear, Steve, the Monday night football game, which is normally on WGN-TV, will be on WGN-TV Monday night.
Not this Monday night.
No, October 9th.
Next Monday night.
Yeah, it's weird, too, that you didn't. Don't you hate it when they have a Thursday and then a Monday night game? So that you have a long span of time there where your team doesn't play?
Well, sometimes that's nice when it's.
there is that.
I'm joking about the quality of play, but it's also nice to have a couple of nice fall weekends off.
Where you're not committed to sticking around and watching the game.
Right.
Or not watching it but regretting it because you can't enjoy Apple Fest because the game's on.
Exactly.
You get a break that way. In our studio is Guy Loudon. He is the president of the Jane Addams Resource Corporation. This visit is sponsored by Country Financial. Country Financial is a sponsor here at WGN Radio. We're happy to have them on board. And they work with a number of organizations, and this is one of them that we actually want you to know a little bit about. And shame on me, Guy. Welcome to the studio, because I don't know about the Jane Addams Resource Corporation. What is it you guys do?
Okay, thanks for having us, John.
Yeah, likewise. I'm glad you're here.
So our mission is pretty simple. JARC helps low-income job seekers attain financial self-sufficiency through a combination of high-quality skills training and bundled services intended to raise the financial health of the whole household.
Give me a typical scenario of somebody.
Okay. Well, but what I wanted to add to that is our training programs focus on the manufacturing sector.
Ah, and isn't National Manufacturing Day coming up this week?
It is, Friday, in fact. So your listeners may hear some buzz about that.
I hope so. So walk me through somebody who might be a typical client of yours.
Sure. So our job training programs work with a variety of unemployed adult populations. It could be a dislocated worker whose skills have become obsolete and he or she's having a hard time getting a job in the labor market. It could be a highly barriered job seeker, someone with criminal arrests or criminal convictions, 10-year holes in their resume. It could be a female head of household who she's been working. You know, she's raised four kids, but suddenly she's 32, and while she's been working, she doesn't actually have skills that have any traction in the labor market. So what people do is they would attend an orientation and learn about our programs and consider whether or not manufacturing would be a good sector for them to pursue a career.
So is it manufacturing per se that you help people find jobs in?
Absolutely.
Skills? And isn't that kind of it's weird because we know that, you know, it's computer, it's high tech, it's et cetera. But isn't there a hole in the manufacturing employment force right now?
There really is. In late 2012, 2013, Deloitte and the manufacturing firm did a study that concluded that at that time that there were 600,000 unfilled jobs in manufacturing, 30,000 in Illinois, with most of those in our seven-county region.
So what are you talking about, like fitters and welders, or what kind of jobs are you talking
welders,
about?
Welders, certainly. So our training programs are targeting what we call middle skills gaps in advanced manufacturing, like CNC machinist, welder. Our target industries and occupations are those that offer family-sustaining wages, benefits, and authentic career paths. And there are careers that have a shortage. So employers are having a hard time filling existing positions.
So do you actually give them the training, or do you just tell them, here's where you get the training?
No, that's the core of what we do, is the training.
Really? You teach people to
Absolutely,
do these things?
Absolutely, yes.
You got welding shops and stuff
Absolutely.
Like that? Absolutely. Huh. And then people training them? And then how much does it cost me to get that training then?
It's free. So we don't. There is no cost to the trainee at all, and in fact, we sometimes are able to find additional resources or assets to help sustain the household while they're in training.
I've heard about that. You and I were talking off the air. My dad was a little involved in a program like this, and the problem would be for some people, they don't have cab fare,
right,
or they don't have somebody to watch the kids while they're learning to be a welder. So
Absolutely.
All of us, and you know that whole notion of, well, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and go get training and go get a job is like, okay, but then I don't have a car. I don't have anybody to watch my kids.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough food for me to take a lunch or feed the kids while I'm gone. Just things that the average person might not think about since they're not in that situation.
Yeah. So what we try to do is take a very holistic approach to the trainee and their household. So in addition to providing really high-quality skills training that's aligned with what employers are looking for, we follow what's called a Center for Working Families strategy, where we're trying to leverage different strategies and resources that'll help the whole household, including, though, resources like the training. You know, in order to get to school, you need a Metro Pass or, you know, some resource like that.
So what's your success ratio then? If somebody graduates, is there a company looking for them necessarily?
Yeah. So we have about 10 years of data at this point for the careers in manufacturing programs, and it can vary a little bit from year to year, but looking at that big pile of data, it's about a 90% completion rate, about 90% of completers place, and about 90% of placements retain. We're currently trying to build out kind of our longer-term tracking so that we can see how people are faring 1, 2, and 3 years in.
How many people graduate the program every year? Or what's the term of a class, and how many people are we talking about?
So it's a pretty robust training. So just to give you an idea, someone in our CNC machinist program would be with us all day, every day for 20 weeks. Someone in our welding program would be with us all day, every day for 14 weeks. In addition, a number of people who come to apply in the program, they come in, and initially they're reading or doing math at a 6th or 7th grade level. So we can't teach them how to program a CNC machine tool if they're doing reading or math at a 6th or 7th grade level. So we've
also got
what's called a manufacturing bridge program that kind of addresses where they are in math and reading and brings them up to where they need to be in order to be in the advanced program. So some trainees may be with us for 30 weeks.
Guy Loudon is in our studio, president of the Jane Addams Resource Corporation. Now, you're in Ravenswood. You're also in the on the west side, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Austin?
Yeah, we're real excited about that. This year and one of our, you mentioned at the start of the show, one of your sponsors for this segment is Country Financial. So that's been one of our corporate supporters, and they've been very intentional about helping to build this Center for Working Families bundled services approach that I mentioned. But I just go into that because in Austin, working with a variety of partners like Manufacturing Renaissance, like Austin Come Together, community-based umbrella of, you know, of groups out there. We've replicated our careers in manufacturing programs in the using the high school, using the existing facility, the Austin Career Academy, and we're using their machine shop, and we've replicated our CNC machinist program and our entry-level manufacturing program.
This must be really rewarding for you. I can just imagine what it is like to see people come in disheartened by their lot in life, and then somebody saying, no, we're going to help you back up. What great work.
It is. It's very fulfilling, and it's something that all of the... We have a wonderful staff at JARC and a wonderful family of volunteers, and they're just dedicated completely to the people in our programs, and it's what keeps us going.
I want to tell people how to actually get involved. So if that's you or somebody you know, then how do we get them involved in this? And we'll do that in just a minute. In our studio is Guy Loudon from JARC, I think we call it, the Jane Addams Resource Corporation. We're talking a little bit about, speaking of assistance, how to give somebody kind of a heads up on job opportunities and training that are out there. The president of the Jane Addams Resource Corporation is here, Guy Loudon. And this visit is sponsored in part by Country Financial because they're one of your financial partners. Is that how that works?
That's true. They support our Center for Working Families and strategies that we use to sustain the health of households.
So are there people out there who don't know? You must run into this. They go, sure, I didn't know that. I didn't know there was such a thing. You're going to train me at no cost and then help me get a job on the other side. Is there a threshold, like I have to be below a certain income level or be unemployed for a certain period of time? How do you determine who gets in?
So the program is designed to, as I mentioned earlier, serve a variety of unemployed job seekers. Sometimes it's people who are unemployment. In some cases, it's people without any prior work history at all. I would say that the main thing motivating you ought to be that you're looking for a job, you're looking for a good career, you're looking for a new start, and you think you might be interested in manufacturing. If that's the case, come to an orientation, learn more about the opportunity, and we would handle working on your financial eligibility. That's something the staff does. But as I mentioned earlier, there's no cost at all to the trainee.
Who hires these people, and what are some of the names of the companies?
Well, some of our major key partners would include S&C Electric Company. I used to work there myself as a CNC machinist back in the day. Huh. Friedman Seating on Chicago's west side is a major employer still in the city. Trelleborg Ceiling Solutions in Streamwood. So we get regional. We get out, you know, into the seven counties. Here in Chicago, again, PK Tool, Dudekind Box, Spring Manufacturing. It's just a lot of – I'm just mentioning some of the companies that over time have really worked very intensively with us.
And are there employers on the west side?
There's close to 300 employers that we've placed.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, and you were talking about transportation, like literally to get the training. But even if you get the job, you probably don't have a car now. You got to use public transportation. You still got to get somebody to watch the kids maybe. I guess my point is it would be helpful if the job was near where the people are. Do we have a kind of – diverse, geographically speaking, set of employers out there that are doing these sorts of things? Are they all concentrated in one part or another?
Our end customer employer partners are throughout the seven counties, but they're mostly, I would say, in Cook County, in the western suburbs, western and northwestern suburbs.
So what's the first step? Go online? Where do you go?
Yeah, so if you're listening, if you're an unemployed job seeker or a grandson or granddaughter, someone else in your family. We have application sessions every Wednesday in our Ravenswood location. They're at 9 in the morning. In our Austin location, they're at 4 in the afternoon. You need to be on time, and you need to spend a plan two and a half hours. It's kind of an intensive process, but that's good because you'll really, if you're interested, you'll leave really knowing that this is something you want to pursue and you'll feel prepared for it. But when you come to one of the orientation sessions, you'll hear about jobs and careers in manufacturing. You know, what is a CNC machinist? What is a welder? What is that like? Hey, if you're going to be a welder, you've got to be able to work around heat and wear a head on, you know, wear a hood on your head, and it's kind of heavy and lots of smoke. Whereas CNC, it involves a lot of math and it involves a lot of technology. So you'll learn more about what it's like to be in these careers. You'll do a tour of our training center. so you can see some of the trainees welding or running CNC machine tools.
Right.
You're encouraged to go over and talk to them. Mm. What's the program really like? Is it any good? Do you like it? After the tour, you'd come back to the main office and do a tape test. That's so we can get some baselines of where you are in math and reading, and you'd fill out an application, and we'd call you back for an interview.
You know, this is great, and I just want to underscore the point. The objective is that these people would find full-time jobs with healthcare. Is mm-hmm. that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Those jobs exist out there for people on the manufacturing field in that area.
Yeah, and again, that's part of why we're working in the area that we're working in. I mean, we've chosen to be manufacturing is strategic because there are skills gaps. There's a shortage of people to fill middle skills jobs that pay family sustaining wages that have healthcare.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us have been told those jobs don't exist.
Absolutely.
But it's more that maybe there's just not people to do those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's jane-adams.org is the website to go to.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. If you want to learn more about how to sign up, come to an orientation, you would go to jane-adams, two Ds and adams.org.
jane-adams.org, mm-hmm. Adams with two Ds, and sign up. Well, I actually we're going to follow you guys, so we'll hear more about the program, how it works, and maybe hear from some of the success stories down the road, but this is how you get started. Guy mm-hmm. Loudon's the president at the Jane Adams Resource Corporation. Well done, sir. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Yeah, thanks so much, John.
Who knew? Now you do. Well, I was just asking if you had anything definitive about Tom Petty.
Well, I do not have absolute confirmation, but many, many sites are reporting that he was taken off life support.
Yeah, taken off life support.
After suffering a cardiac arrest yesterday.
Meaning that he's passed away then? You're not there again. I'm asking you questions
right.
You don't have the
don't,
answer to
no,
in front of
you. No, but I mean, one of the reports said that when he was brought to the hospital, he had no pulse. So, I'm sorry, he was put on life support at the hospital. No. I believe they did say he was brain dead. That was it at the hospital.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's still coming out, and we're just no confirmation yet is all I can say.
The other headlines that I'm just looking at here on CNN: the killer's father was among the FBI's most wanted. CNN is reporting. The Paddock's father was among the FBI's most wanted. I watched
bank
the
robbery.
Say it again.
Bank robbery.
The killer's father. I'm talking
yes.
about Stephen Paddock. Oh, that's what
the
he was wanted for. Bank robbery.
Was on the 10 most wanted for bank robbery.
Huh? Because I watched the interview with his brother, and his brother was just gobsmacked. He just could not believe that his brother was the person that did this. And I totally get it, and I totally believe it. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking there must have been something about this individual that you folks knew that you don't want to share with us. You don't have to share it with us right now. You know, you're dealing with it on your own. But you think, how can you be that shocked that that person is capable of this? But he sure did seem convincing at the time. Now, is there something else going on in this family that would have maybe been a tell or a tip? I don't know, but there's the headline. The killer's father among the FBI's most wanted for bank robbery. Walking into the studio, Anna DeVlantis,
yep.
Rokan, getting ready for their 3 o'clock show. I'm going to get out of your way once you guys get rolling. What's out of the gates, Ro?
Well, Ryan Burrow is going to join us from Las Vegas. Alex Stone is there for us as well. And we'll try to get as much detail as we possibly can. I think what you're doing, what everybody is doing right now, struggling to find answers, trying to make something rational out of a completely irrational act. Mm-hmm. And this becomes the challenge in a lot of these. This one does seem so purely irrational because it doesn't seem to come out of any kind of political motivation. His family's denying they had any kind of mental illness, but that's on its face incorrect.
Well, this is the definition of it, isn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm. So there isn't a way to, you know, to clearly wrap this into a bundle that we can digest. But we'll get you as much detail as we possibly can. Also, we are following the very, very, very sad developments around Tom Petty, who apparently has had a massive heart attack and been taken off of life support. He was brain dead and taken off of life support. So we'll give you details on that as well. And then we will break for a little bit of Bears news. Obviously, ESPN is reporting, amongst others now, that the Bears are going to start Mitchell Trubisky as a quarterback on Monday.
You're on board with that, right?
Well, I hate to do any kind of victory lapping here. This is an appropriate time to do it. But But from the very beginning, we predicted that week five would be the moment that he'd be.
Oh, no kidding. Was that your sort of over under? Week five?
Week five.
Can I get verification on this?
Yeah,
is that what he was saying?
Because you were saying that they'd have 10 days or 11 days to prepare, roughly, from the Thursday night game to the Monday night game. And it seemed like the perfect opportunity.
Even before the season started, I targeted that as the date because that's a famous. Minnesota is the, you know, the famous from the 85 season, the famous game where they brought McMahon back in who had been injured, and he wins the game from being three down. You know, so it was three touchdowns down, so three scores down. So I thought that was – I don't think that this Bears organization thinks like that, but as a Bears fan, I do. So I kind of had that in my head, and a lot of people were predicting that too because of the 10-day layoff. So that apparently is the case. So we'll get to
maybe
that.
Maybe it's just as well then that Glennon did as badly as he did. Because suppose he was just marginally good and still limping along. Then you wouldn't maybe have the call to action that the last game really presented.
The quarterback who the Bears did not take, that Sean Watson, who would have been the Bears quarterback take if they were going to go there. If Trubisky were taken second, they would have taken Deshaun Watson. Sean Watson is playing in Houston, and he lit it up this weekend, set a record for the franchise. And so this is you set a rookie record, I think, for the NFL too. So this is not outside the parameters of what the Bears are looking at, right? Because they look at this and they go, oh, wait, they're starting him and they're having success with him. And we're still playing the guy that we paid all this money for because we were impatient and worried about what the draft was going to bring us. Okay, so it's time to move on.
Have a good show. We'll be listening, guys. Thanks.